Hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another fantastic episode of the Jack Benny Show. This one is unique for me. Some of you have heard this coming if you listen to Friday's Fred Allen Show. But this one I want to talk a little bit about Dennis Day. And just, I don't think I ever get across how much I appreciate Dennis Day. I love the way he's written on the show. I love the way Dennis acts out his part. I also enjoy his singing. And this, of all the songs he sings on all the episodes of the Jack Benny Show, this is my very favorite song of his. It's not a famous song that I know of. And it's not what one we would traditionally think of as a Dennis song. It's not like an Irish song or anything like that. But it is a wonderful, just really cleanly performed song that I think has a lot of hooks in it that makes it feel more contemporary. And I I love the whole parts of, you know, there I go, thrillingly in love with you, there I go. It's just, he sings it beautifully. Anyway, so here it is in its entirety, and I will continue later.
Once before I fell in love so blindly, never asking how or why or when. Darling, I was treated so unkindly, I resolved I'd never fall again. There I go, leading with my heart again. There I go, acting not so smart again. Oh, it's unwise, I can't disguise my love. Oh, I know too much love may curb the fire. There I go, led astray by my desire. There's no golden rule to guide a fool in love. I tell my heart, be careful, or you'll find that you dream alone. I'm wise, it's true, what good does it do? My heart has a mind of its own, dear. And there I go, spilling all the dreams I knew. There I go, thrillingly in love with you. Don't know if you care, darling. There I go.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that performance by Dennis Day of There I Go. What's interesting about this is it was performed last week, and I just learned about it, on the Fred Allen Show. Kenny Baker performed the song. And it's interesting because the Jack Benny troupe was heading over to New York, and so they came over to New York, and then the song was played. And I know that Kenny Baker and Dennis Day would get together from time to time. And maybe Kenny said, hey, this is a song I just recorded last week on the show that I just really loved or something, and here you go. I'm not sure how this happened, but it's just kind of interesting that they would both perform the song back to back, or else it was just entering some stage of popularity, though I didn't remember this being a popular song. Frank Sinatra re-recorded this song in the mid-1950s on one of his albums. It was not one of his... It was sort of a collection of his, so it could have been recorded earlier. It could have been from the 40s, I suppose, and put on the album in 1955 or whatever it was. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the song. I hope you enjoy this wonderful show. It's got some great character bits in it. I just love Jack's bodyguard is played so well and in such a funny way. And it's interesting how they, back in this time frame, even played with the sort of effeminate voice that they would use and poke fun of that. And I'm not even sure what all that entailed and whether, you know, at that point it was considered to be kind of your stereotypical voice that we're used to today or not. But anyway, it's a fun voice that the bodyguard uses, and so I hope you enjoy this episode half as much as I enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time.
The Jell-O program, coming to you from the Ritz Theater in New York City, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Cheerio. Ladies and gentlemen, if I seem to be just a bit excited tonight, please forgive me, because Jack and I just got our first glance at a wonderful new recipe book that the General Foods people have been working on for the past year and a half. It's called A Calendar of Desserts. And friends, this Calendar of Desserts is the most attractive, most convenient, most exciting book of recipes ever introduced on the air. In all our 7 years of broadcasting, we've never offered you, Jell-O listeners, a recipe book of any kind. Frankly, we wanted to wait until we had something really outstanding. And the Calendar of Desserts is it. It's not just a small booklet that you'll use maybe a time or two, but a recipe book designed to be used every single day of the year, with a grand dessert suggestion for every day from January to December, charmingly illustrated and cleverly arranged for rapid reference. Just name the day and presto, this convenient calendar names the dessert. There are 365 different ideas for all kinds of desserts, including pastries, puddings, cakes, cookies, and of course, dozens of delightful Jell-O desserts, too. All of you I know will want this swell calendar of desserts, and we've made it easy to get. Simply send your name and address to Jack Benny, care of General Foods, Battle Creek, Michigan, enclosing 10 cents in coin or stamps. Write for your copy of this new handy calendar of desserts tonight if possible, tomorrow sure. Cheerio, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, this week our program originates from New York City.
Yes, sir.
New York, which was originally purchased from the Indians for $24.
Yep, 24 bucks.
So tonight we bring you a man who could have bought it for $23.50, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Jell-O again, this is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I don't mind your kidding me about being tight when we're in Hollywood. But here in New York, it doesn't fit. You see, there's a guy living in this town that makes me look like Diamond Jim Brady.
Yes, I think I know who you mean.
I think you do. This particular fellow, whom I shall refer to as F.A., is so stingy that all during the election, he wore a Roosevelt button with Teddy scratched off.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. I wouldn't make any gags about Fred Allen if I were you. Remember, he's right here in New York, and you might have trouble with him.
Oh, I'm not scared of that windbag. Now, let me tell you something, Don. I've got a bodyguard with me that's one of the toughest mugs in New York City. His name is Killer Hogan. So don't be afraid to ask me what I told you to this morning. Go ahead, Don. Ask me.
Okay. Tell me, Jack, why did Allen say on his last program that your teeth were so sensitive that you had to warm your dental floss before using? Is that true?
No, he just said that because he's jealous. You see, Allen has no teeth at all.
Well, I can't understand that. I've often seen him chewing gum.
Don, you may have seen him gumming his gum, but not chewing it. as a matter of fact... Oh, hello, Hogan.
Everything's okay outside, Chief.
Okay.
Everything okay in here, Chief?
Yes, okay.
I'm on the job, Chief.
Okay, okay. Well, Don, it's sure great to be back on Broadway. And,
oh, pardon me, Jack. Was that Killer Hogan?
Yes, he may not look so tough, but he's really a gorilla. Tell me, Don, have you had any fun in New York?
Oh, yes, indeed, Jack. The little woman and I are having a grand time.
Oh, yes, the little woman. By the way, Don, as long as this trip is a sort of a honeymoon for you, I'd like to pay your wife's hotel bill as well as yours.
Oh, no, you don't have to do that, Jack.
Oh, yes, Don, I insist.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much. That's darn nice of you.
That's all right. By the way, where are you living?
At the Ritz-Carlton.
Oh. Oh, the Ritz-Carlton, eh?
Yes, it's on Madison Avenue.
I know where it is, you big fathead. All right, Don, I made a promise, and I'm going through with it. You can live at the Ritz.
Thanks.
Now, here's a handful of nickels. You know where to eat. No use standing in line for change.
Hey, Chief.
Oh.
There's a dame out here. Should I let her in?
A dame?
Yeah, she looks suspicious.
Out of my way, Ecstasy.
Mary. Mary, aren't you the one? You know, Mary, you got a bigger reception than I did. You must be... Hogan, what are you standing there for?
She took my blackjack away from me.
Mary, please return Mr. Hogan's blackjack.
Some blackjack. It's got jelly beans in it.
Never mind. Hand it over.
Okay. Here it is, Hogan.
Don't... Darn you.
Mary, I won't have you beating up my bodyguard. You can go, Hogan.
Okay, Chief.
Now, Mary, was that nice?
A fine bodyguard.
He's okay. I got him from a very reliable employment agency.
They must have sent you manicures by mistake.
Just leave him alone, that's all.
Okay. Hello, Don. How's the little woman?
Oh, she's just fine, thanks. And you know what, Mary?
What?
Jack is paying all of our expenses at the Ritz-Carlton.
That's great. Jack who?
Jack me, that's who. I'm paying all the expenses for Don and his wife while they're in New York. It was my own idea.
Can't be the heat. It's cold here.
All right, it's cold here.
Oh, by the way, Mary, I saw you last night at the Ed Wynn show. Did you see it, Jack?
Ed Wynn? Not yet, Don.
Well, don't miss it. He's a scream. I tell you, Jack, my side still aches.
Oh. Ed Wynn, eh?
You should have been there. You know, Jack, Don laughs louder at Ed Wynn than he does at you.
Oh, he does, eh?
What else did you see, Mary?
Oh, I saw a lot of swell shows. I've been going every night.
Ed Wynn, eh?
I saw George Washington slept here and Panama Hattie, and I saw...
Just a minute, Mary. Listen, Wilson, what's so funny about Ed Wynn?
Well, to tell you the truth, Jack, I think he's one of the best comedians I've ever seen.
Oh, you do, eh?
Yes, I do.
Well, then get him to pay your wife's expenses at the Ritz.
Oh, Jack, you don't expect Don to go to a musical comedy and not laugh at it, do you?
No, but he doesn't have to keep raving about Ed Wynn all the time.
I wasn't raving about him. I just said I liked him.
All right, you like him. That doesn't mean you have to go around telling people that I'm washed up. Then he's through. Finished.
Who said that?
I can read between the lines, brother.
What are you talking about?
The minute he gets in town, he's got to run right over and see the Ed Wynn show.
Oh, Jack.
And he comes to the program. All he talks about, Ed Wynn, Ed Wynn, Ed Wynn. That's all I hear.
Well, what about it?
Personally, I can see no reason for paying his wife's hotel bill. So? So the deal's off, Don.
Oh, boy, I wish I could get out of my girdle that easy.
I wasn't trying to get out of it, Mary, but...
Say, Chief.
Oh, fine.
There's a young fella out in the hall who claims he's a tenor. Should I give him the old one, too?
No, let him in.
Okay. Come in, you.
Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Now, you can go now, killer. Dennis, give Mr... Dennis, give Mr. Hogan his blackjack.
The jelly beans, too?
Yes. Now get out, Hogan.
Who is he, Mr. Benny?
My bodyguard. I got him in case Fred Allen tries to have me slugged.
Well,
something.
You don't have to worry about anyone annoying you at the hotel, Mr. Benny. You're at the Sherry Netherlands, aren't you?
Yes, Dennis. Why?
Well, my uncle is the house detective there.
Oh, is that so? What's his name?
Peekaboo McNulty.
Oh, yes, I met him. And by the way, I wish you'd speak to him, Dennis. He threw an aunt of mine out of my room yesterday. It was very embarrassing.
I'll mention it to him.
Thanks. Well, Dennis, as long as Phil isn't here yet for his band number, how about doing your song?
Okay.
Wonder where he is, anyway. Mary, did you call Phil at his hotel like I told you to?
Yes, and before I could tell him who I was, he made a date with me.
Oh, well, he'll probably be along pretty soon. Go ahead, Dennis. Let's have your number.
Okay.
Now what? Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
It gives me extreme pleasure to welcome you to our...
Thanks, Hogan. Drag him out.
Okay, Chief. I knew I'd get rolling.
I knew you would.
Once before I fell in love so blindly, never asking how or why or when. Darling, I was treated so unkindly, I resolved I'd never fall again. There I go, leading with my heart again. There I go, acting not so smart again. Oh, it's unwise, I can't disguise my love. Oh, I know too much love may curb the fire. There I go, led astray by my desire. There's no golden rule to guide a fool in love. I tell my heart, be careful, or you'll find that you dream alone. I'm wise, it's true, what good does it do? My heart has a mind of its own, dear. And there I go, spilling all the dreams I knew. There I go, thrillingly in love with you. Don't know if you care, darling. There I go.
That was There I Go, sung by Peekaboo's nephew. And very good. By the way, Dennis, you remember before we left Hollywood, I promised your mother I'd keep an eye on you and see that you behaved yourself.
Who, me?
Yes, you. I don't want to stop you from having a good time here in New York, but I don't like the idea of your going to burlesque shows and then waiting at the stage entrance for the girls. That isn't nice.
Well, you do it.
Dennis, after all, I'm a little older than you are.
A little, he says.
I mean, I'm an adult. In the first place...
Hiya, Jackson. Look what I found out in the hall.
Phil, put Hogan down.
Okay, well, here I am, folks. Come on, patty cake.
You had to ask for it, didn't you? All right, killer, you can go.
Should I give him the old one, too, Chief?
No, just get out.
Okay. I'm on the job, Chiefy boy.
Say, Jackson, who is that guy?
Never mind him, Phil. What's the idea of showing up so late?
Well, you know how it is, Jackson. I only get to the big town once a year. I got a lot of things to do, a lot of things to see.
Uh-huh.
Now, take this afternoon, for instance. I went to Staten Island.
You went to Staten Island? How did that happen?
I followed a blonde into a hotel and it turned out to be a ferry boat.
Oh, so you went to Staten Island, eh, Phil? Did you see the Statue of Liberty?
Yeah, and she waved at me.
Now cut that out! Anyway, Phil, it's nice to do a little sightseeing while we're in New York.
Oh, boy, Fifth Avenue on a windy day.
Quiet. What a guy.
Say, Phil, don't forget you promised to take me to see Life with Father next week.
It's a date, Mary.
Wait a minute, Mary. I took you to see Life with Father the last time we were in New York.
Yeah, but look where we sat. Way, way up in the balcony.
Oh, we weren't up so high.
Go on, a St. Bernard dog brought us our program.
Now, don't be silly. We couldn't have been so far up. I saw the whole show.
Sure, but you hogged the telescope.
You had it just as much as I did.
Hey, Chief.
Oh, my.
There's a man outside that says he's a doctor.
A doctor?
Yes. Should I give him the old 1-2?
Yeah, give him the 1-2. Where is he?
Jack, look, it's that quack you had in Hollywood.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, well, how's my little man this chilly, willy day?
Dr. Leroy, I told you last week my cold was cured. What are you doing in New York?
Now, I've got a cold. Is there any of that medicine left?
No, there isn't.
Well, as long as I'm here, I might as well look you over.
Doc, I told you there's nothing wrong with me. I feel wonderful.
Now, open your coat. I want to tap your chest.
Oh, what's the use?
Now, hold still.
You see, there's nothing wrong.
Let's try over here.
Well, there goes my watch. Now, Doc, will you please leave me alone?
Just a minute. I want to see if your lungs are all right. Take a deep breath.
Oh.
Come now, take a real deep breath.
Oh, all right.
Now hold it.
Ladies and gentlemen, while Jack is holding his breath, why don't you run down to your neighborhood grocer and ask him for a package of Jell-O? It is not only tempting, but economical and easy to make. Jell-O comes in 6 delicious flavors, strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. So always look for the big red letters on the box. I thank you.
Well, good night, Mr. Benny. I'll see you tomorrow, and then you can exhale.
I'm exhaling right now. For heaven's sake, how long do you think I can hold my breath?
Look at his face, Doc. It's all blue.
Don't worry. It'll go back to gray in just a minute. Goodbye.
Imagine that
guy.
Hey,
wasn't he a different doctor than we had the first show? You know, folks, that's what I like about radio. If your doctor gets sick, you can always use one of your writers.
Imagine that guy coming all the way from Los Angeles.
He was here, Mary. He didn't come from Los Angeles. Believe me. I see him every day. Well, it's Rochester's fault. I told him before we left Hollywood to call up the doctor and tell him I don't need him anymore.
Hey, Jackson, where is Rochester?
I don't know. I haven't seen him since our first day in town. We got off the train. He came to the hotel with me, unpacked my trunk, pressed my new brown suit, put it on, and that's the last I saw him. Now, Phil, play a number while I cool off a little, will you?
Okay. But listen, Jackson, this isn't my regular band, so don't expect too much.
Phil, believe me, if they hit just one good note during the entire number, you have not made this trip in vain. Now, go ahead, Chiefy.
Thank you.
that was anything played by Phil Harris. Oh, so you're the one played by Phil Harris and his New York orchestra. Say, Phil, where did you pick up these musicians?
Oh, I just stood in front of the Bond building and whistled.
Well, from the sample I just heard, you better go back there and pucker up. Say, Mary, do me a favor, will you?
What do you want?
Get my little book out of my overcoat. I got some phone numbers there where I might be able to reach Rochester.
Okay.
I'll find out once and for all whether he's California's ambassador to Harlem or working for me.
Hey, Chief.
Oh, fine. What is it, Hogan?
There's a guy out here who says he's the mayor.
The mayor?
Yeah, he don't look like LaGuardia to me.
He don't, eh?
No.
Hello, Jack. Can I see you for a minute?
What? Why, it's the mayor of Waukegan, Bidey Talcott. Come on in, Bidey. Well, this certainly is a surprise. I'm glad to see you, Bidey. Listen, Hogan, this gentleman is the mayor of my hometown.
Oh. Then I'm glad I didn't give him the old 1-2.
What do you mean, the old 1-2?
1-2, button my shoe, 3-4.
3-4, shut the door. Yeah. I know. Get out of here. Holy smoke. Huh?
My goodness, Jack, who is that fellow?
Well, it's like this, Bidey. Fred Allen's got a bunch of thugs out looking for me, so I had to hire a bodyguard. Bidey, you know the gang, don't you?
Sure. Hello, Phil and Don.
Oh, glad to see you, Mayor Talcott.
Hiya, Bidey. What's cooking?
Phil, please.
Well. And there's Kenny Baker. Hello, Kenny.
Hello.
Dennis, wake up. You're not Kenny Baker.
What's the difference? A tenor's a tenor.
Well, I've had trouble with all of them, if that's what you mean. Tell me, Bidey, how's the old gang in Waukegan? How's Julius Sinekin and Stubb Wilburn?
Oh, they're around. The last time I saw Stubb, he was on the floor of his garage.
Well, fixing a car, eh?
Nope, just laying there.
Ah, good old Stubb, huh?
Here's your little red book, Jack.
Thanks. Oh, Mary, you remember Bidey Talcott, the mayor of Waukegan, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Bidey. What's that under your nose?
That didn't go the first show either, I guess. Say, Bidey, don't know why we didn't change that. We were changing. How did I overlook that? Bidey, I meant to ask you, isn't that your gavel sticking out of your coat pocket?
Yeah.
What do you need that for? You're in New York.
I brought some walnuts with me.
Goody, after the show we'll have a party.
Yeah. Now, excuse me a minute, Bidey. Say, Mary, I've got to get in touch with Rochester. Call up this first number in my little book. He may be there.
Okay.
Well, Bidey, I can't get over your being in New York. What's the big idea?
I came to see you about the premiere of your picture, Jack. We're all set for you in Waukegan.
In Waukegan? Why, Bidey, didn't you know the premiere of Love Thy Neighbor is being held right here in New York Tuesday night?
Well, I'll be doggone.
Jack, yes. That number's ringing.
Give me the phone. Excuse me, Bidey. Hello?
Hello. This is the Harlem Social Benevolent and Spare Ribs Every Thursday Club.
Can you tell me if Rochester's there?
Come again?
Rochester Van Jones. He works for me, and I want to talk to him.
Are you Mr. Jack Benny?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
What do you mean, oh, is he there or not?
Well, he was here, Mr. Benny, but as soon as he started to win, he left.
Oh, I see. Was he shooting craps?
He must have been. We ain't much on backgammon up here.
Oh, well, where do you think I can get in touch with Rochester?
You might try Monument 81700. That's his girlfriend.
All right, thank you. Mary, try Monument 81700.
Okay, Chief.
Oh, Bidey.
Yes, Jack?
I'm surprised you didn't know about the premiere being held in New York.
Well, can't you switch it to Waukegan?
Not very well. You see, it's all set for the Paramount Theater here Tuesday night, Bidey, and...
Well, I'll be doggone.
Yeah, well, look, Bidey, there was nothing
here
I could...
Here you are, Jack.
Give me that phone. Excuse me, Bidey. Hello?
Susan Brown, the sweetest gal in town, talking.
Well, Miss Brown, this is Jack Benny.
Uh-oh.
I'm trying to get in touch with Rochester. Is he there?
He was, yeah.
Oh. Well, do you think he'll come back?
In all modesty, I can guarantee that.
Brown, when he returns, will you please have him call my hotel? And also tell him he's not getting any salary this week.
That ain't gonna worry him much. He's got a paradise that must have gone to Harvard.
Oh, he has. Well, Miss Brown, where do you think I could reach him right now?
Well, he left a number here. Lehigh 2, 5863.
Lehigh 2, 5863. Is that another girl?
If it is, I'm going to cut your brown suit to ribbon.
Well, I'll call anyway. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Doggone, that boy's always in trouble.
Say, Mary.
What?
Rochester won a lot of money in a crap game last night.
Well, figure out some way to get it yourself. I'm busy.
It's not why I mentioned it. Dial Lehigh 2-5863 and see if he's there.
Okay.
You know, Bidey, I'm awfully sorry about the premiere, but didn't you get my letter?
Sure, but I want the opening to be in Waukegan.
So do I, Bidey, but it can't be done.
Well, why not?
Look, Bidey, if I told you once, I told you five times. The premiere is in New York, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Here you are, Jack.
Give me the phone. Excuse me, Bidey. Hello?
Hello, Lenox Avenue, Gym Till You Spin Club.
Now, look, Mr.
Radcliffe Spears Jr. talking.
Now, look, Radcliffe, I'm trying to get in touch with Rochester Van Jones.
Uh-oh.
This is Jack Benny.
Yeah, you heard me. Uh-oh, didn't you?
Now, listen. What about Rochester? Is he there?
He was here, but he made his point and left.
I know. I understand he's been very lucky.
Lucky, he says.
Now, Radcliffe, please tell me, where did Rochester go?
I don't know. Hey, Sylvester, where did Rochester go?
I don't know. Hey, Pancake, where did Rochester go?
I don't know.
Hey!
Never mind where it go. I'll find it myself.
Now, look, Bidey, I did everything I could to have the premiere held in Waukegan. I went to Paramount personally. I argued about it. But they insisted that it must be in New York. So you see, Bidey, if there was anything I could possibly do, I'd be glad to do it.
Friends, during the last few months, I've heard a lot of stories about what a swell book this new General Foods calendar of desserts was going to be. But honestly, I never dreamed it was going to be half as beautiful and original as it really is. It's a unique dessert book that gives you a new dessert idea for every day in the year. 365 different suggestions covering every kind of dessert and a whole host of clever Jell-O treats, too. For example, on page 9, there's a recipe for a grand dessert called Currant Ruby Moles, made with rich red strawberry Jell-O, and it's really good. Strawberry Jell-O, you know, like raspberry Jell-O, is now better than ever with the new improved flavor obtained by using a natural flavor base artificially enhanced. So get your copy of the calendar of desserts and be all ready to make this grand treat and 364 others. Just send 10 cents in coin or stamps to Jack Benny, care of General Foods, Battle Creek, Michigan, and a copy of this beautiful, useful day-by-day calendar of desserts will be mailed to you promptly. Send for yours today.
Last number of the 11th program in the current Jell-O series, and we will be with you again next Sunday night, still broadcasting from New York City. Say, Bidey, as long as you're in town, how about sticking around till Tuesday and see the opening of our picture?
Okay, of course I'll have to call up the little woman.
Well, now you're talking. Good night, Joni.
J-E-L-L-O.
Hello again, this is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another fantastically great episode of The Fred Allen Show. This show has a little bit of everything for everybody. First, we'll start off with it's certainly has some more than the normal banter back and forth with the Jack Benny Show. And the reason for this probably is because Jack's in town. Jack's in New York. And so both shows are in New York. And when that happens, they usually have quite a bit of exchanging back and forth. On top of that, tied to Jack Benny is, if you listen to Thursday's Jack Benny episode from 70 years ago, I talked about the great voice that they had for his bodyguard, Killer Hogan. And that's played by, alternately, either Charles Cantor, not Eddie Cantor, Charles Cantor, or Charlie Cantor, whichever. He seems to go by both of those two names throughout his career. Anyway, it seems like his career basically was being on Jack's show and being on Fred's show, and especially when they were in New York, he was like on both shows usually, which is kind of crazy. Anyway, so he's playing as Killer Hogan again tonight for a few minutes on the Fred Allen Show, which is fun. A nice tie between the two shows. Also, what sticks out to me is in the first few minutes of the show, there's a bit about politics that Fred goes into. And I was thinking to myself, if they wanted to do this today on The Daily Show and have, your host of The Daily Show and one of his reporters do this bit, same bit back and forth, you could do it verbatim. There's I can't think of a time when you could actually take something verbatim and cut it from 70 years ago and put it in this whole 2 minute or so bit. And it would get laughs today, and it would be accurate today. And that's just crazy. But that's the way it is. That's how far ahead of his time Fred Allen was. I almost want to cut it, write it down and send it to the Daily Show folks and say, hey, here's something you could do from 70 years ago and see if anybody even notices that it's that old. And I don't think anybody would. Anyway, so there's that bit. And there's a few different political... this show's a little more political heavy than a few of the previous episodes, which is always fun on the Fred Allen Show. And there's some great Kenny bits referring back to over to Dennis, and he'll do the same next week. It's a fun few weeks for the Fred Allen Show. And then we have a great Christmas skit at the end of the show. It's just a solid, solid show all the way around, which is a lot of fun. And after Christmas, we're going to get one of our Christmas gifts you're getting from me is that we've had these Fred Allen shows for months now that have been unavailable for decades for most people since they originally aired, that have just recently come into circulation. And that's what we've been airing these last months. These episodes weren't available a couple years ago. Now they are. We're still in those episodes. Unfortunately, these episodes we've been playing, have the music cut, have the advertisements cut, and sometimes sloppily cut, so they cut chunks out of the show. Tonight's is one of those that jumps around, you're going, whoa, where are we at now? But after Christmas, we'll get into it when I have the entire shows. Still shows that were originally uncirculated and then became circulated just recently, but were the entire hours available, all the music, all the ads and everything, so it'll be fun to hear a complete show. And that's starting, I think it actually starts on the first week of January. And the other thing that happens is I have both the East and West Coast feeds. So I'm still debating on what to do there. Right now I'm leaning towards putting them both up, just because he ad-libs so much. I think that both shows will be different enough that maybe I should put them both up. But maybe put the podcast on the one that has the best sound. And that's kind of what I'm leaning at right now. But email me if you want me to do it differently. And, of course, buckbennyotr@gmail.com. And just really enjoy this episode. It's a terribly fun episode of the Fred Allen Show. Again, another home run for Fred. So enjoy, and we'll see you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jimmy Wallington speaking. I am also available for after-dinner talk. My voice has great flexibility. Can do comedy, drama, or just simple straight lines like, here he is, Fred Allen, in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, Jimmy, for including me in your Help Wanted ad. It was very nice of you.
Well, I didn't think you'd mind, Fred. People hear so little about me on the program.
Why, so little, Jimmy? Mm-hmm. Why, you positively dominate the entire end of the show. Why, when everyone else is through, you always say, isolated like, this is Jimmy Wallington.
Yes, I know, but if it's a good show, people are laughing, so nobody hears it.
And, if it's a bad show?
Well, my name is the last thing people hear. I get the blame for it.
Well, in other words, you feel that while you have played no part in laying the egg, you are left to cackle over it. Well, that's, you've got something there. Take it up with me later in the feed and grain store, where I'm going directly after to peddle tonight's... hello, Kenny.
Hello, F.A. Say, can I ask a favor?
Well, it all depends, Kenny. What is the favor?
Well, I gotta get away early tonight.
Oh, you mean you won't have time for your song?
Oh, I have time for my song, all right. It's just that I can't wait for my applause.
Oh, you want your applause before you sing?
Yes, if it's not too anticipatory.
Well... Well, where did you get that word?
Phil Harris gave it to me for Christmas.
Well, you left it in the stocking too long, Kenny. The sock has gone out of it. But about this applause business, the audience won't applaud, naturally, unless you sing your song.
Oh, but the people don't applaud my whole song, F.A., just the last note.
Say, I never thought of that. Well, if you've got to get away later, Kenny, and won't have time to wait, why don't you just sing your last note now and get your applause while you still have time?
Say, that's a great idea.
Mr. Goodman, will you and the orchestra join Kenny in the last note of his first song? All right, Kenny. Thank you. You might get a job as vocalist on a spot announcement through this little thing. And on that music... on that musical promissory note, which leaves Kenny owing us all a song, we turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. New York City, New York. Columbia University holds conference on education for gifted children. At a meeting held last Friday, a group of young men and women, whom psychologists had hailed as child geniuses 20 years ago, appeared to tell what had happened to their genius status in later life. Tonight, Texaco News investigates the case histories of several other brilliant ex-children who will tell their stories here this evening. But first... We present an authority on child genius, Professor Midas Tate. Now, where do you teach, Professor?
I am Professor of Applied Child Psychology at the Weehawken Day School for Abnormal Junior Intellects.
And the fact that the person is in Weehawken means that the person has an abnormal intellect. Well, what are your duties around the school besides sweeping up, Professor?
I pick out the kid geniuses.
You select the geniuses? Well, with so many children going to school, how can you tell a genius?
It's easy. I look only for kids with big heads.
Oh, you mean that any child with a big head...
is a genius.
Well, tell me, Professor, when you find a child genius, what do you do?
I segregate them.
Oh.
Put him in a special class with other geniuses.
Well, why?
Well, you can't leave a genius in with a class of dope kids. It's dangerous.
Well, how do you mean?
Why, the kid genius starts smartening up them dope kids. Contamination sets in. All them dope kids will grow up smart.
And you don't think that everyone should be smart?
Nah, you gotta have dopes. Who's gonna buy sweepstake tickets? Who's gonna borrow money from loan sharks? Who's gonna bet on horse races? You gotta have dopes. Dopes is the backbone of the human race.
In your opinion, Professor, when you find a genius...
You should segregate him. Otherwise, he'll contaminate somebody.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, you got a big head, brother. But on you, it looks good.
Would you say that I was a genius, Professor?
You're a dope if I ever seen one.
Well, you picked up a following all of a sudden, I noticed. And get away from here before you contaminate me. And thank you, Professor Midas Tate. A young lady who was the talk of the Lower East Side as a child is Miss Stephanie Gittleman. You are a genius, Stephanie.
If Stephanie Gittleman is a genius, it is not for me to say. That is for you to say.
You, you've got a Michelinish in the throat. But you will have to admit that you were an exceptional youngster.
At 5 years old, I am already going to high school.
Well, at 5 years old, were you sighted as a child?
Sighted, he says. At 6 years old, I am not only sighted, I am nearsighted.
Really?
At 7 years old, I am already wearing bivogals.
Bivogals. But despite your bivogals, Stephanie, your academic progress was rapid. When did you finish college?
At 9, I am graduating Bryn Morris.
Bryn Morris. A very popular school. Bryn is running the Morris plan on the side, I understand. Well, tell me, at Bryn Morris, were you a sorority member?
Phi Beta Kaplan.
Well, tell me, Stephanie, what have you been doing since you left college?
Confidential and nothing.
You can't get a job?
Who wants a genius?
Well, of course.
A girl to get a job today has got to be a hachi-tachi.
Yes, if a girl is good-looking, she doesn't need any education.
She could even be a maroon.
I see.
Well, some girls has got oomph. I got the high IQ.
But you're not bad-looking, Stephanie.
This I know, but I am wearing bivogals.
Yes, but...
There is an old saying, a girl with bivogals is not catching moguls.
Say, that rhymes.
I could help if I'm a genius.
Yes.
I'm always rhyming.
Well, what are some of your rhymings, Stephanie?
Mostly I'm rhyming mythology.
Mythology, the Greek god?
Exactly. Vulcan, Vulcan, why are you sulking? Hercules, are you a tease?
Yes, he was...
Heighty-tighty, Aphrodite.
Very good.
But the best rhyming, I'm rhyming about my personal predicament.
Well, what is your poem called?
What to do with a high IQ.
What to do? Well, could you recite it, Stephanie?
Why not?
Well, fine, go right ahead.
What to do with a high IQ? You are asking me, I am telling you. The Eskimo in his cold igloo, the monkey jumping around in the zoo, they are happier than me, and I'm in who's who. Oh, what to do with a high IQ?
Well, thank you for...
What to do with a high IQ? It will get you meat at the barbecue. It will help you pay off an IOU. It will get you a chance to pitch some woo. I'm laughing and it's on you. I am saying P.U. to a high IQ.
only one thing about these people come to the microphone with things in their throats, the Croup Theater. You can't trust them. A new branch we're opening up. Another scintillating tyke, who astounded psychologists at an early age, is LaRue Dink. You were a child genius too, LaRue?
Oh, yeah. As a kid, I had a head like a squash.
But you were intelligent.
I was so bright you could read by me.
I mean, if you could read.
Yeah.
Well, really?
Yeah, I used to give off a kind of a dull glow.
Well, when you got a glow, you got a glow. You were luminous.
Could I help it? I was a genius.
Well, now, what studies did you excel in, LaRue?
Well, when I was five, I was majoring in ichthyology, ipsychology, and speaking 9 languages.
You don't say.
Yeah, there's only one thing. I never was no good at arithmetic.
What a pity.
Yeah, you could say to me, Veni, Vidi, Vici in Latin. I'd give you a civil answer.
Such as?
Probatum est.
Well, that's fair enough. Yeah. I mean, at your age, if you want
to... You could say to me, Comment allez-vous, LaRue, in French.
And you'd answer?
I'd peek around the edge of my baby buggy and say, Je suis in the pink, et vous?
Remarkable.
Yeah, but if you said to me, LaRue, how much is 2 and 2? I was sunk.
You couldn't compute?
I'm a genius, but I ain't no good at arithmetic. If I'd have been born a halfwit, I'd have been better off.
Well, what are you doing today?
I'm doing 20 years. Yeah, the warden let me out just for tonight.
You, LaRue Dink, a child prodigy, ended up in jail?
Yeah, it was me old nemesis.
How do you mean?
Well, I've been working as a teller in a bank.
Yes?
Last month, I'm $20,000 short.
Proving?
I still ain't no good at arithmetic.
Condolences and thank you. Now, young boy, what is your name again, Spratt?
Kenny Baker.
Were you a child genius, Mr. Baker?
No, and I ain't any too bright today, it says here.
What brings you to our microphone at this time, Mr. Baker?
I'm about to sing a song.
And the name of the song is?
Meanie.
Meanie. Well, let's mow, Mr. Goodman.
It was Meanie, sung by our frustrated tenor, Kenny Baker.
Now, wait a minute, Fred. Kenny Baker's a big success. What do you mean he's frustrated?
Well, Kenny is a success as a singer, Larry. I'm speaking of his thwarted ambition. You know, as a boy, Kenny wanted to be a locomotive engineer.
Oh, no kidding, Fred.
No kidding, Larry. Underneath Kenny's neat pompadour there, he carries a mental picture of himself roaring along at 90 miles an hour with his hand on the throttle, Highball Baker of the Eastbound Mail. You know, if a railroad made Kenny an offer tonight, he'd get his oil can and leave us like a shot.
Yes, I guess we've all had boyhood ambitions like that, Fred. You know, we all wanted to be engineers or racing drivers or airplane pilots. Anything where we could control power and speed.
And then we grow up and get some drab little job like selling ribbons or telling jokes on the radio. And the thrill we dream of never comes.
Well, I wouldn't say so, Fred. We still can get that thrill when we drive a high-spirited, nimble, modern car. It's fun to take that wheel and put your foot down on more power than you ever knew before.
Maestro, cut it out now. We got to pick up 15 seconds here. Now, let's all pull together. Maestro Goodman and his ferry boat Philharmonic have just played All the Things You Are from Very Warm for May. And now, ladies and gentlemen... Oh, there are more people in radio on the wrong side of doors. I don't... Come in.
Mr. Allen?
Yes?
I want to warn you, Mr. Allen.
Warn me about what?
Don't you dare molest Mr. Benny while he's in New York.
Well, who are you?
I am Killer Hogan, Mr. Benny's bodyguard.
You've got a part-time job. What do you want around here?
I warn you, if you come near Mr. Benny, it'll be fatal.
Fatal to whom?
To me. I'll drop dead for that.
Then Benny's bodyguard. He borrows a debouncer from some tea shop that's in receivership and tries to throw a scare into... Oh, hello, Portland.
Hello. Who was that man?
That man just went out. Well, he's supposed to be Benny's bodyguard. What Benny wants with a bodyguard? He's got as much body as a glass of elderberry wine.
Did you hear Jack Sunday?
Yes, I heard him. My jokes get better laughs on his program than they do on mine.
Are you both telling the same jokes now?
Apparently. The only difference is that I seem to be telling them first. It's I audition them for him, I guess, if they're any good.
Well, Jack said you were cheap.
Cheap? Uh-huh. Now, look, Portland. The Lipton Tea Company has been in business almost 100 years. And in all that time, the Lipton Tea Company has only had one person ever mail in a tea bag for a refill. And that person is the man who deigns to call me cheap. And if Benny's stenographer didn't get that joke, she can call up and I'll tell it over again.
Oh, I don't think Jack's that cheap.
Look, do you know why Benny is sway-backed and his eyes are bad?
Why?
Well, you know that little light that's always on inside of a Frigidaire?
Yes.
Well, Benny can't bear to think of that little light going to waste. So he crawls inside of his icebox to read. Why, any night that you are in Benny's house and you see him put on his overcoat, his coonskin hat, and his mittens, and then pick up the evening paper, he's off to the icebox to read.
Gosh!
Well, he generally wets his right mitten before he gets in to turn over the pages of the paper, this wet flap he has on the end of his sleeve. Why, Benny's eyes are so bad at the premiere of Love Thy Neighbor last night, he had to ask people how he was doing. He repented later, but I...
Well, how was the picture?
Well, it's a one-man picture. Rochester does it again. But Mary Martin is swell. Benny plays himself in the picture. He's badly miscast.
Gosh, it's funny, you and Jack in a picture.
That's what you think. And now I have a surprise for you and our audience, Portland. Our guest tonight is the person who is responsible for the feud, the picture, and the whole mess. He's the little boy who first played the bee on our program, and here he is, Master Stuart Cannon. Good evening, Stuart.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
Well, you've changed quite a bit since I saw you last, Stuart. How old are you now?
14.
Say, even your voice has changed, hasn't it? Stuart, when you played the bee on our program some years ago, you didn't know what you were starting, did you?
No, Mr. Allen.
You still play the violin?
Yes, I do.
Silly question when you've got it with you. I mean, I knew it wasn't ornamental that you... Well, the grisly repercussions of your last appearance with me didn't cause you to renounce the Stradivarius and abandon your symphonic aspirations.
No, Mr. Allen. I'm quite in earnest about becoming a concert violinist.
Well, do you play in public at all, Stuart?
Yes, I'm concertmaster of our high school orchestra, and they also play in the orchestra at the Henry C. Settlement Music School.
Well, good for you. You're still studying, of course.
Yes, Mr. Allen. I spend 3 to 4 hours every day practicing.
Well, that's fine. 4 years ago, your playing made Major Bowes bait out of Benny. What would it do to him today?
Oh, I don't think Mr. Benny is such a bad violinist, Mr. Allen.
Oh, come, Stuart. You don't have to show any professional courtesy around here. Now, you know perfectly well when Benny starts to saw on that melody sarcophagus of his. It sounds like a she-wildcat defending her young. Benny, a violin player, Stuart, after all. He's been playing the violin 30 years and still has trouble getting it out of the case.
But after all, Mr. Benny's a brother musician, Mr. Allen.
Well, of course, if you insist on being loyal, Stuart. Say, tell me, has anything exciting happened to you in the last 4 years?
No, nothing special. But then 4 years isn't such a long time.
No, Stuart, 4 years isn't a long time. Unless you're a Republican. Have you been on the radio since that first appearance of yours?
Yes, I appeared on the summer show with Harry Von Zell. And another time, I won a contest for young violinists and played on a program with Jeanette MacDonald.
Why, as radio goes, you're practically Rubinoff in short pants. Well, when you realize, Stuart, that through getting mixed up with Benny and me, you became the innocent instigator of many embarrassing and far-flung events, don't you feel a little guilty sometimes?
How do you mean, Mr. Allen?
Well, look, Stuart. Now, you came on our program 4 years ago, and you played the B on your little violin. Now, you didn't mean any harm. You were just a small boy trying to get along in E-flat. So what happens? I make a casual remark to the effect that a certain party could never play the B. He replies that he can. Bad jokes begin to clutter the air. Sponsors are paying a fortune for radio time so the gags can be told. Finally, Benny plays the B, sets the violin back 400 years. But does the feud end there? No, sir. It keeps going till Paramount Pictures gets wind of it. They fetch Benny and me out to Hollywood to make a movie. Millions of dollars have been spent. Hundreds of people have worked their heads off. And the whole nation has been in a state of flux for 4 years. Now, all this has happened, Stuart Cannon, because in December 1936, you tucked a fiddle under your little chin and played a piece called The Bee. Now, how do you feel?
Gosh, it's a wonder I haven't been arrested.
Say, as long as Benny and I are still loose, you don't have to worry. But before you go, you're going to play something for us, aren't you?
Yes, I'd like to.
What piece have you selected?
Well, I'm kind of scared to tell you, Mr. Allen.
Don't tell me it's the eBay.
Yes, it is.
Well, all right. Ladies and gentlemen, Stuart Cannon will now complete the cycle he began 4 years ago by playing Schubert's The Bee.
Thank you, Stuart. It's been nice of you to stop in tonight. I'm glad you're growing up such a fine boy. Now, Mr. Benny and I owe a lot to you for starting our feud, and we want to do something for you in return, Stuart. Now, you want to become a concert violinist, and to further your symphonic ambitions, Mr. Benny and I herewith present you with a check for $1,000. That is yours, Stuart. We have spoken to your mother, and she understands that this money is to be used to advance your musical career. And, Stuart, Mr. Benny and I both hope that you will one day become a famous master of the violin.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. And I want to thank Mr. Benny, too, for giving me this opportunity. I'm going to work hard, and I hope that someday you and Mr. Benny will be proud of me.
Well, I know we will, Stuart. Thank you. Good luck. And thanks a lot. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, two important announcements. You have only 5 more shopping days before Christmas. You have only 3 more stopping days before winter.
Well, what do you mean, Fred? 3 more stopping days?
Why, Jimmy, your ignorance is becoming noticeable. Winter officially starts this coming Saturday. So you have only 3 more days to stop in at a Texaco dealer for winter protection.
Oh, no, Fred. There's not that much time.
Well, Jimmy, I'm no Einstein, but my arithmetic isn't that bad. Now, this is the 18th, isn't it?
That's right.
Saturday is the 21st. 18 from 21.
Oh, I know, Fred. It's true that old man Winter puts in his official appearance this Saturday, but it doesn't mean you have three more days. Old man Winter is likely to strike at any...
What? Say, what is the matter with Kenny this evening? He hasn't played with his yo-yo all night long. He's just been sitting over in the corner pouting.
Well, Kenny feels pretty bad, Mr. Allen.
His colic again, or his rickets back, are they?
No, it's Dennis Day. Kenny and Dennis aren't speaking anymore. Kenny's all upset.
Kenny and Dennis had a fight? What happened?
Well, Kenny took Dennis Day out Monday to show him New York.
Yeah?
And two policemen brought Dennis home at 4:30 in the morning.
Plastered?
No, deserted. Kenny left Dennis in the Statue of Liberty.
He left him in the statue? What brought that on?
I, Goodman, to this subject can add.
Mr. Goodman, you know something about LaFaire Dennis Kenny?
I know that poor Dennis Day all night was trying to get out of the Statue of Liberty. Such screaming. From 2 miles away, I could hear him.
Well, how could you hear someone yelling in the Statue of Liberty at midnight? Where were you?
I was playing pinochle with my brother-in-law on Ellis Island.
What is your brother-in-law doing on Ellis Island, Mr. Goodman?
He's there on business. The government is consulting my brother-in-law.
Consulting him on what?
Who knows? Import, export, deport.
Now, look, keep your brother-in-law out of this.
He should worry. They're keeping him out all over.
Quiet, please. Now, I'm trying to find out what happened between Kenny and Dennis. Why, formerly, they were as close as two fat jitterbugs in a revolving door.
Quiet, Mr. Allen. Here comes Kenny.
Oh,
Mr. Benny. Mr. Allen.
Wait a minute. Who are you working for? Now, remember where to go for your salary Saturday. I'll admit, I'm shrinking up, I'm beginning to look like Kenny, but I didn't think I was that bad. But the name is Allen, Kenny.
Well...
Yes, Kenny.
Mr. Allen.
Yes?
Is it time for my number yet?
Well, what's this I hear about you and Dennis Day?
Oh, it's nothing. I'm just disillusioned, that's all.
Oh, Kenny, don't tell me your faith in humanity has been shattered.
Well, humanity's all right. It's the people in it.
You mean, meaning Dennis Day?
I'm not mentioning any names. But I will say that a certain party is a notorious cheapskate.
You mean Dennis is frugal?
Frugal? Brother, he's tighter than the hips of a sailor's pants. The only thing big about that guy's his draft number.
Why did you leave Dennis in the Statue of Liberty, Kenny?
I'll tell you why. I took him all over New York.
Yeah.
We painted the town red. I paid for everything, and he leaves me holding the bag for $2.45.
That's painting the town red?
It sure is.
With borscht, I could do better.
Now, quiet, Mr. Goodman. We are not discussing interior decorating.
Borscht is good even in conversation.
I'll grant you that.
I look well in borscht.
You look well in anything you eat. Now, your vest right now will go 200 calories. But we are trying to settle Kenny's problem here.
Nobody's jipping me out of $2.45.
But, Kenny, maybe Dennis was broke.
I happen to know, Porty, that Dennis has got 18 bucks socked away in 3 California banks. And that lump in his left stocking ain't a sunken mump, either.
Now, look, Kenny, all we want to know is why... Abandon these recriminations. All we want to know is why you left Dennis in the Statue of Liberty. Now, just what happened?
Well, right after we landed on Bedlam's Island...
Yeah.
I brought up the subject of money.
You after you laid out the 245, you hinted, did you?
Kinda.
Uh-huh.
When we started climbing up into the statue, I says, gee, two guys can see New York together pretty cheap, huh, Dennis? So Dennis says, not as cheap as I'm seeing it.
He didn't take the hint, huh?
No. Then as we were climbing up the shoulder of the statue, I says, Dennis, wouldn't it be a beautiful world if everybody shared and shared alike?
What did he say to that?
He says, don't pull that radical stuff on me.
I once knew a radical.
A fifth columnist?
No, a second violinist.
Now, Mr. Goodman, please.
What happened next, Kenny?
Well, we finally got up to the Statue of Liberty and up to the top, and we were in the Little Finger, bending out, looking at the ocean.
And you hinted again?
Yes. I said, Look, Dennis, right over there is Ellis Island. That's for people who come across.
Come across? Well, did he finally catch on?
Not that guy. He said, nobody in my family has come across since a Mayflower. Brother, that's when I scrammed.
What are you going to do about the money, Kenny?
I'm sending the little miser this itemized bill. A lawyer told me he has to pay his share.
What lawyer?
I don't know his name. I met him outside the Goodwill Court.
Oh. Well, let me look at that bill you've made out there. What's this first item? Good humors, 20 cents. Merry-go-round, 10 cents. Only one of you rode?
Yes, Dennis went on a giraffe. I ran around with him.
Oh. You get the breeze, and it's healthy, too. Well, what is this next item? Minsky's, 35 cents.
I went in. It was my turn.
Oh. And, Dennis waited outside, huh?
Yes. I told him the story of the play when I came out. It was all about a bubble.
The whole story about a bubble. Now, let me see what else have we got here. Grant's Tomb, the Aquarium. Say, Kenny, what's this here? Bridge, $1. You had some dental work done?
No, that's the Brooklyn Bridge.
Well, that isn't a toll bridge. What's this dollar?
We bought it.
You bought the Brooklyn Bridge for a dollar?
It was Dennis's fault. If we'd have held out, we could have had it for 75 cents.
Kenny, don't you know that selling the Brooklyn Bridge to yokels is the oldest swindle in New York?
Yeah? Gee, no wonder that guy wouldn't give me a receipt.
Oh, you've got to be careful sightseeing around New York City.
Are there still men who go around selling the Brooklyn Bridge to innocent people?
What do you think my brother-in-law is being deported for? Whistling on Sunday?
It could be for just being your brother-in-law. Not waiting long enough for the second part of that line. Now, look, Kenny, why don't you forget the $2.45 and write Dennis a note. And just tell him you're sorry you left him in the Statue of Liberty.
Do you think I should?
Oh, why, certainly. After all, you had a good time with Dennis.
Go ahead and dictate a note, Kenny.
Sure.
I'll write it down for you.
Okay. Dear D.D.
D.D.?
That's Dennis Day. It's also a dirty double crosser.
Now, wait a minute. Wait, your friends.
That's right, I forgot.
Yes, now go ahead with your letter, Kenny.
I'm awful sorry about leaving you in the finger of the Statue of Liberty.
Now, that's good. That's nice.
I just want to tell you, Dennis, that I had a swell time while you're here in New York. I don't think about the $2.45 anymore, except when I'm awake.
Well, that makes me feel better. Now, go ahead, Kenny.
I've got bad news for you, Dennis. Mr. Allen just told me we were swindled when we bought the Brooklyn Bridge. We don't own it at all.
Go on, Kenny.
But don't worry, Dennis. The next time you come to New York, you can ride all over town on the new 6th Avenue subway absolutely free.
But you can't ride free on the subway, Kenny. It costs a nickel.
Not for the owner, it doesn't.
You bought the 6th Avenue subway?
I snapped it up Saturday night just before it opened.
Just before?
The man didn't think it was going to work, so he sold it to me cheap.
I give up. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the first time in the history of radio, the president of a great subway system steps up to the microphone and sings Dream Valley.
With all the sound and fury over the picture Love Thy Neighbor, there remains one little man whose contribution has gone unrecognized until now. He's Mr. Seymour Undertow. Now, just what was it you did in Love Thy Neighbor, Seymour?
Me? I sunk.
You sunk where?
In that motorboat sequence in the picture. You know, the director wanted some background atmosphere.
Yeah.
A guy fishing, a couple of kids wading, another guy drowning.
Oh, and you were cast for the drowning man?
Yeah, they're shooting the scene. I'm out there in the water splashing and struggling. The director yelled, drown. Down I go. Boy, what a performance.
Well, I don't remember seeing you in the picture.
Oh, you didn't? Didn't you notice that little white cap off of the starboard bow of the monopole?
That white cap was you?
Yeah, they said I didn't put enough life in my dying. They cut out everything but the splash.
Well, that's Hollywood for you, Mr. Undertow. If a scene isn't full of life, it's a dud. As that renowned M.D., master of duds, James Wallington, often puts it.
Hollywood motion picture directors know the value of action. Before a film is released, it goes to the cutting room where slow-moving scenes, the duds in the picture, are taken out. And in a way, that's how Texaco gives you all action with its famous Fire Chief gasoline. Texaco Refining sees to it that slow-action elements, the useless duds that deaden...
The barrel is revived about this time each year. The Texaco workshop players curtsy to tradition and repeat a Christmas fable they first presented yules ago. Tonight, Santa shows his claws in a modern tale called Santa Claus Sits Down, or Jingle Bells Shall Not Ring Tonight. Overture, maestro.
This is Station NGNG.
Good evening, friends. The makers of Magno, the magnified mousetrap for nearsighted mice, bring you the exciting quiz program, Double or Leave It.
Attention, please. We interrupt the exciting quiz program, Double or Leave It, to bring you a bulletin from the Assassinated News Service.
Flash! Santa Claus will not ride this Christmas. In a terse bulletin issued for his North Pole igloo today, Santa Claus says, quote, I am on a sit-down strike. I refuse to ride this Christmas, unquote. Rumors flood the country. A report from Dallas, Texas says...
200 families living in trailers stop building chimneys. Do not expect Santa Claus.
At Rutland, Vermont, a little girl says...
I wrote Santa Claus a letter and got no answer. He ain't coming.
At Detroit, Michigan, a labor official says...
Santa Claus better ride, or the Teamsters Union will pull out every reindeer from here to Juneau, Alaska.
At New York City, 200,000 children hold mass meeting. Tiny spokesman says...
Santa Claus can't let us down. 200,000 American children have appointed me their spokesman. I'm off to see Santa Claus now. James, my scooter.
Well, come in, little boy. What are you doing way up here at the North Pole?
Santa Claus's igloo, ma'am?
Yes, sonny, I'm Mrs. Claus. Who are you?
Well, I'm Buddy Jones.
Are you lost, son?
Well, no, ma'am. I'm here to see why Santa Claus refuses to ride this year.
Well, I'm glad you come, son. I've been arguing with the old Fumfit all week. He refuses to budge.
Well, where's Santa Claus now?
He's in the next room, sulking.
Well, can I see Santa?
Sure, I'll get him for you, son. Hey, Santa.
Ain't no use in coaxing, Ma. Now, I ain't going.
Come on out, stupid. You got company.
Yeah? Who?
I'm Buddy Jones, Santa Claus.
Well, don't mean nothing to me, Sprout.
Is this awful rumor true, Santa Claus?
Yep, I ain't riding, son.
But this is Christmas Eve, Santa. Trees are lighted. Millions of trusting children have hung up their stockings. The world is waiting for you.
Well, let it wait. I ain't riding.
But, Santa...
Oh, ain't no use, Nipper. He's stubborn.
No, I ain't not neither, stubborn, Ma. I'm just sick of being Santa Claus. The world don't appreciate nothing. Squabbling, threatening, striking, warring.
But you just can't quit, Santa. You must have a reason.
I got plenty of reasons, Sprout.
As spokesman for 200,000 kiddies, I demand a statement.
What is it you want to know, Shaver?
Why won't you ride tonight, Santa Claus?
Well, son, I'll tell you. Son, I've been Santa Claus in it since the world began. For 1,940 years, I've been bringing people presents every Christmas, or trying to spread joy. My intentions has been good, but my reward has been nothing but misery. The first trouble I had was back in ancient Rome. It was Christmas Eve in the court of Nero. The emperor was playing a violin concerto.
Zounds, lackeys! You dare to give Nero the pheasant? We want a haughtiest Tonius.
Your Majesty is Tornius.
Tornius? You scoff at my Stradivarius?
Your music will never get Rome haughtiest.
Get haughtiest. You dogs! Begone, hypocrites! Scrabius! Nero can't get haughtiest. Those dogs, I'll show them. Bodkins, what tumbles out of my chimney?
Merry Christmas, Nero. Merry Christmas.
Who art thou, Lumpkin? The chimney sweep?
I'm Santa Claus, Nero, bearing Christmas gifts for your majesty.
Ultimus nauseam. What is it, another basket of figs from the Rome Kiwanis Club?
No, my gift is a trinket rare, Nero. So rare, it hasn't even been invented yet. Here.
Gramercy lout. What is this tiny golden box?
It's a cigarette lighter, Nero. Turn that little wheel.
Art's blood, it flames.
Merry Christmas,
it
Nero.
It flames. Roma scoffed at Nero. Nero will have his revenge.
Hey, watch that lighter, Nero. You're setting fire to them draperies.
I can't make Rome hot with my music, eh? I'll make Rome hot. Revenge!
Look out,
revenge!
Nero. Fire! Fire! So you see, son, if it wasn't for Santa Claus, Rome wouldn't have burned.
Gosh, that was too bad, Santa.
There I was, trying to spread good cheer, and what did I get? The first hot foot in history.
But that was 2,000 years ago, Santa Claus. You shouldn't hold a grudge that long.
Well, Nero was just prologue to my trouble, son. A few centuries later, I set out to bring a present to Napoleon and Josephine. I'll never forget that Christmas, son. Josephine was a-sittin' on her chaise davenport. Napoleon opened the door.
Josie, ma petite.
Nettie.
Voilà. I am detour on the way to Waterloo, especially to say au revoir.
Non, lover. Non, nettie, wepie.
Un moment, and your nappie is away. C'est la guerre.
I will be faithful, mon nappie, wepie.
Bien. If quelque man will dare to pay court to my Josephine, I will kill him. Touché.
Your petite Josephine has no other suitors, nappie, je swear.
Bien, mon big, beefy oiseau.
Voilà, I have a farewell present for you, nappie. Wait ici.
Oh, bien, bien. Mademoiselle from any place, parlez-vous? Oh, mademoiselle from...
Oh.
Who goes there? Who is coming through the fireplace?
Merry Christmas, Napoleon.
Sacre bleu. You've come to woo my Josephine, gigolo.
Now, hold on. Put down that truncheon now.
Voilà, cochon. Take this.
Oh,
and this.
Oh,
and this.
Oh, let out. Help.
Bien ridiens.
Your little show returns, nephew.
Ah, with the mistletoe, you sly pussycat.
Yes, it's Christmas Eve. What can be keeping Santa Claus?
Santa, mon dieu. You are expecting the chap in the red suit?
Oui, nephew. Don't you think Santa Claus will come?
Not tonight, Josephine.
Yes, son. Napoleon gave me a concussion that Christmas. Running out of the castle, I fell in a moat. My ermine got wet and come to life. My collar and one cuff got away.
But you can't stay mad at the world because years ago a Frenchman mushed you up, Santa Claus.
Well, things has happened since, son. Another Christmas, I got a raw deal in a suburb of England. It was called the American Colonies. I dropped in at the house of a scapegoat named Paul Revere. The cottage had no chimney, so I looked in the window. Mrs. Revere was preparing a turkey. Paul come limping into the room.
Christmas dinner ready, Effie?
Yes, Paul. Pull up a chair.
Set my plate on the mantelpiece.
Can't you sit down yet, Paul Revere? That ride was last April.
Through every Middlesex village and farm, ain't once around Central Park, Effie.
Well, you ought to try and sit down for Christmas, Paul. It'd be a nice present for your spy.
Who's that?
Might be a British spy, Paul.
Hand me my gun, Effie. Who's there, Whig or Tory?
Merry Christmas, Paul Revere. It's Santa Claus.
So what?
I've got your Christmas present, Paul. It's a cushion stuffed with fuzz from Delaware peaches.
For me to set on?
You bet.
Don't let him in.
Sounds mighty tempting, Effie.
Might be some British trick, Paul.
No, I'm Santa Claus, Mrs. Revere. Open up.
I got my gun, Effie. I'll open the door a crack.
Merry Christmas.
I told you, Paul. Look at that suit.
A red coat. Take this.
Well, son, when I got back to my sleigh and sat down, I was mighty glad I still had that cushion full of Delaware peach fuzz. You see, son, the world's given old Santa plenty of trouble.
It sure has done you dirt, Santa. But nobody dare abuse Santa Claus today.
Well, there's where you're wrong, son. Only last week I was previewing a visit. I went down to a place called Washington, D.C. Well, I got mixed up and went down the wrong chimney. I come out in some office. I was going to wish the man a Merry Christmas when he yelled at me.
What are you doing here? How much money do you want?
Now, I ain't no senator. I'm Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah. The State Department's looking for you. You're through.
Through? I ain't even started.
You're washed up, Santa Claus. The government's ruled you're too slow for this job. You're a bottleneck.
Now, hold on. You fellas gummed up Thanksgiving, but you ain't monkeying around with Christmas.
Settled, Claus. It's all settled. Turn in your sleigh and reindeer to the FBI. Here's your receipt.
Well, you can't legislate me. I'm a mythical character.
Being a friend of Wendell's won't help you.
It ain't right after 1,940 years. You can't plow Santa Claus under. I got something to say.
Oh, a fifth columnist, huh? I'll take care of you.
Yes, Chief.
The works, Bildad.
Okay, Chief. Here's your subpoena, Fatty.
Subpoena? For what?
You're wearing a red suit, Fat.
What about it? Wearing a red suit ain't never been a crime.
It is today. Let's go.
Now, hold on, mister. Who are you?
I'm a member of the Dice Committee.
Gee, Santa, you certainly had a lot of trouble.
Well, that's why my spirit's broken, son. Being Santa Claus is just a pain in one century after the other. I'm through.
Please don't say that, Santa. Have pity on us kids. We'll have no toys.
Santa ain't a-moving, son. This is one Christmas I'm gonna enjoy in peace. What's that clock striking?
It's 12 o'clock.
It is, eh? Well...
It's Christmas Day, Santa Claus.
Don't mean nothing to me. I'm taking it easy. I'm sitting right here.
Won't you change your mind, Santa?
I ain't getting kicked around again this Christmas.
Please, Santa Claus.
Hey, Ma.
Yes, Santa.
Where's my mitten? My bag? My reindeer? My sleeve?
Santa.
Yep, I'm a-going, Ma.
I'm a Santa Claus.
I've changed my mind, son.
Oh, thank you, Santa.
Christmas ain't Christmas without Santa Claus. I'm giving the world one more chance.
Can I have a statement for all of the kiddies, Santa?
You bet you can, son. Just say, it's Merry Christmas.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. This is...